I can show you all the best tactics in the world, but if you don't believe you are worth it or you deserve it, then the words will go in one ear and out another.
Welcome to the Expanded Podcast with your host, Lacey Phillips. As a leading manifestation advisor with a process that's, well, radically different from the old New Age model, mine is rooted in psychology, neuroscience, and my energetic gifts. I created this podcast to help you expand your subconscious limiting beliefs about the potential of deserving the manifestations you're calling in. Therefore, you're tuning into this podcast series to show your subconscious that anything you desire is possible. And by pressing play, you've already started the process of manifesting it. So we finally have here in Los Angeles, week three down of this quarantine, which I know around the world, the quarantine timeframes definitely vary for everybody. Last week, if you didn't get a chance to check in, I have a mini episode that we put out, and it has me going through the energetics of this time, how to navigate it, and, you know, a really big message in it is leaning into your edge, as this is a time that's creating an entirely new depth of trust and surrender that you will gain. And some messaging that I came across this week talked about really not needing to manifest and being in total divine timing, in total surrender, and that you are innately worthy and innately abundant. So it's actually not about manifesting. And though I think there were and are incredible important takeaways in that messaging, I also think it's really important to understand when we're hearing these messages from people to really take a look at the person who's expressing them and look at how much work they've done on themselves for how many years. Because the one thing that it struck in me when I used to follow that type of spiritual bypass, so I am enough, I don't need to work on myself, I'm perfect the way I am. I practiced that for a lot of years. And it kept me in the same space of the mud and the muck for the entirety of the time that I practiced it. And that is one thing I just really want to tell people. Each of us we're in such different places. And I'll say this in more scientific terms, but a prime subconscious. And so for the person who's in a primed space of subconscious, they've really peeled back their onion layers. They truly deeply know and understand on a subconscious level their innate worthiness, their innate lovability, their innate deservingness and abundance. That's somebody who can play in that space of being in surrender and divinity and abundance without needing to really do as much on themselves, more maintenance when triggers come up or a lot of patterns. But not everybody has that privilege. And I certainly wasn't in that space before I started to really, just like our messaging is here, I started, you know, everything we teach is getting back to your true innate worthiness. We are all born whole, worthy, deserving, abundant. But for many of us who don't have the privilege of already being in that prime subconscious, who have gone through pain, trauma, shame that we're looping on and continuing to manifest or reach wall after wall after wall, understanding that there are tools that will empower us and that will change our life to reflect back what our core soul essence has come onto this planet to experience and have, and not to be misunderstood with common manifestation practices that are like egoic and go get the thing and the blah, blah, blah. Everything that, you know, if you're doing this work, you understand everything here is about tapping into and understanding how to listen and align with your true core authentic essence and what it needs and it desires so that you can co-create in a lot more flow And, you know, the universe is always co-creating with you, even if you're not in your aligned path, you know, in your divinity. That's when you receive beautiful things like tests and rock bottoms and mirrors. And so I just really needed to say that I respect that messaging and I think it's beautiful, but I also think it's really important to digest it with a little bit of intellect and personal philosophizing, because those who deliver that message tend to be people that are in a more, and I'll say privileged, but state where they have done a lot of work on themselves. They have, you know, gotten into their flow and their divinity. And for those like I was for a very long time that hadn't and would have heard that message and been like, oh, I can trust this. It feels like a good hug. You know, I'll go to sleep tonight feeling better, but my life will still continue to look the same over and over for many years after that. I'm really happy that you have tools and support. And therefore, that's why I think it's really beautiful and important to hear from expanders during this time who are expanding during the quarantine. I saw this in the Facebook group a lot, people who don't feel motivated by this time. Yeah, oh my God, I get that. Are you kidding? Like, so many of us, the rug's been pulled out from under us, and not just financially, emotionally, stability, understanding what our norm of safety felt like before this, uncertainty, unknowing. And I just want everybody to know, go at your pace and your speed. You know, at points, we're going to have felt every spectrum of emotion during this time. We're going to oscillate between many emotions. And at the point where we don't feel motivated, and it actually feels like a relief that people don't have to be productive right now, that's awesome. Lean into that. But at some point, we all, it's human nature, are going to get back to a more actionable space where it's very important to understand that action equals presence as well. You know, it's not just future foot forward. It's like being here now, taking responsibility that and empowerment that I am a co-creator and that I do have the pen to my life with the universe. And we get to do this dance together. So yeah, I just want to give licensing to wherever you're at. It's valuable, it's important, but I'm also so grateful that you have tools. So that leads us into hashtag stay in trust. We talked about it last week. It is an expansion point that we're going to share weekly until we're out of this quarantine of community members in the space, in the pathway that are continuing to manifest during this time to expand and show you exactly what's possible for you. And so let's get into those now. The first starts. Hi, everyone. I've been trying to hire a senior staff member for 9 months, trying to find the perfect person, and I just found her 2 weeks ago, and she started with me this week. Also, March has been the best month in my business this financial year. Finally, I asked on the new moon in February to find my next spiritual teacher. Earlier this week, I saw an ad for a shaman here in Australia who was running a grounding circle on Friday night via Zoom. I signed up straight away. I got on the Zoom circle last night, and all of the others who signed up didn't appear. So I had my spiritual teacher all to myself for an hour and a half, and I had so many breakthroughs. And then it's like an emoji with hearts all over it. Hashtag stay in trust. And here's the second one. I manifested a partner during this time. I was sitting in bed and I felt called to download Tinder. Here I am thinking to myself, this is what my life has come to, laugh out loud. But no matter what, I always follow my pings. I didn't know how to work it, so I was going so fast, I passed him at first, and then another ping said, delete the app and re-download it. So here I am making shifts. I did as I was told, and boom, he came up. I was so nervous. So I swiped and I got off. Then I came back and we matched. I didn't know what to say, so I messaged, hey, we've been talking and laughing about this whole thing for days. Being as conscious as possible, I realized this is the first time I felt so grounded just talking to someone. It's weird, but that's the best word I could find. I'm loving these times for the purpose of manifestation, shifting, aligning, and expanding. I feel simply alive in every way. Hashtag stay in trust. And last but not least, here's the third. Obsessed with Friday's episode about the energetics around manifesting during this pandemic. I wanted to post this in case it's expansive for anybody. My husband's in the photo industry. He's got extra time on his hands now, so he's been doing photo editing. And I work in the music industry, and both of those income portals are 100% closed right now, as is our Airbnb property. We also have a 6-month-old baby and way more expenses than we've ever had before, and way less time. Less time to do the work, but I've still made sure to fit it in a couple of times a week. So in good news, I've had an MLM side business for 8 years now. Don't worry, it's not a pyramid scheme. We are actually a B Corp and have been around for decades, don't require inventory, etc. And I've always done pretty well with that, but this month is my fastest growing month ever, especially without me forcing or working around the clock. And I 100% know it's because I've been doing the work for going on 8 months now. If I wouldn't have had months of this work behind me, I would be a mess right now, and I know my business would still have been stagnant. Thank you so much for this work, Lacey. It is a true gift. Hashtag stay in trust. Well, there you have it. We're going to continue to share these just because, again, I think it's so important to continue to expand right now if that's the space you're in. And just know that when you are ready to be active, you have tools at your fingers. And that's just what we want to provide for you, is that support and also these expanders to help you. You can also go and visit The Motivation, which is linked below, and find others that have manifested exactly what you're looking for during this time. So today I'm so excited. I'm so stoked. You heard me talk about this guest basically a lot last year. I would reference his book all the time, that I was making a ton of financial changes in my life based on his advice. Today we welcome Ramit Sethi. He's a 2-time New York Times bestselling author, founder of I Will Teach You to Be Rich, which I recommend everybody reads, and an expert on starting, building, and growing successful online businesses. He's also a personal finance and online business expert who studied psychology at Stanford and started a blog about online businesses, money, careers, and psychology that now has 1 million+ monthly readers. This episode was chock full of such good takeaways that we decided to break it up into 2 parts. So what you're going to hear today focuses on how to navigate your finances during this time of uncertainty. And then we have a money month coming out pretty soon, which you'll hear part 2. And that's really focused on going further in depth about personal finances and how to navigate those. So I think everybody can benefit from this episode, regardless of where you land during this pandemic financially. It has fantastic advice, and I'm just really excited. Let's get into it now. All right. Well, welcome, Ramit. I have a slew of questions for you.
I'm ready. I'm excited.
Excellent. Well, the first I kick off with everybody is, tell us about your cultural upbringing and background, and don't hesitate to certainly get into your dad buying the car and how you got through Stanford.
Okay. So I grew up, my parents are immigrants, and they came here from India. In fact, they met each other, got married 7 days later. My mom got on a plane for the first time, came to America to meet my dad. And so growing up here was growing up with 2 different cultures. My parents taught me about frugality. My parents taught me, you know, our family vacations were typically driving from Northern California to Southern California. And we would stop and pull over on the side of the road. And my mom would pull out a bag full of sandwiches that she had made. So those were the kind of experiences we had growing up. But also as a child, we never really felt like we were missing anything. So overall, we had a really good childhood. I'll give you an example. We played a lot of sports as kids, pretty big family. And you know what's crazy is, as we grew up, I went back and asked my mom, how did you pay for all these sports? Because they're pretty expensive when you're doing multiple kids and you have to pay registration fees and uniforms. And she told me that when we used to play soccer, at one point she called up the AYSO, which is the soccer org for kids, and they told her all the registration fees. And she's like, do you have any other way for us to pay for that? Because that's really expensive for our family. And they told her, if you come by and chalk the field before the game, we will waive the fee. So wow. In my 20s, I found out that that's what my mom was doing so that we could go and play soccer.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
God, that's incredible.
So you know, I'm very thankful to them. And then growing up as kids of immigrant parents, they also taught us a lot about education. They had this funny phrase, which was, why don't you write it up? And we'd be sitting around the dinner table talking about, you know, whatever we were talking about. And they would say, why don't you write that up? Why don't you send that to the Sacramento Bee? And I don't know where they came up with that phrase, because they're not writers. But what they really meant was, you have something valuable that the world needs to hear. So why don't you write it up so that they can hear it? And you know, what's funny, incredible. I became a professional writer. And so I'm very thankful to them for what I learned. And then along the way, helping me to think about education and get into college and pay for it with scholarships. These are all things that I learned originally from my parents.
And then I think it's so important to outline, because I've obviously been through the book quite a few times, and I think the questions we'll get into today will be a little bit more current to help people, rather than what I originally had planned was to kind of touch on some points in the book that I think are so valid, because I see you as such a progressive voice in finance, coming from somebody who's just been studying it personally for a long time. But I think a really pivotal story was your dad going to buy the car set such a tone for how you see opportunity in finance.
Yeah. So growing up, you know, it's funny the messages that you receive from the people around you when it comes to money. And I guess I would ask everyone listening, what were the questions, what were the topics discussed around your dinner table or at home? What were the phrases that you grew up hearing about money? You know, I think for a lot of us, we hear phrases like, we don't talk about money in our family, or easy come, easy go, right? Or those rich people are just out there stepping on other people to make their money.
Money's bad.
Money's bad. Huge. What's amazing is those stories we heard at age 7 or 8 stick with us. And so suddenly you have somebody who's in a relationship with a new partner, you're getting into arguments about money, and you can't figure out why. And if you actually trace it back, maybe with the help of a therapist, you might discover that it comes from this phrase you overheard as a 7-year-old. So those are the stories that we grow up with. And I grew up with my own set of stories. We all do. Some of them were great. Some of them I had to outgrow and create my own. I remember at one point, you know, you always realize that maybe my family's a little different from everybody else's. Like, I grew up and I realized that not everybody keeps potatoes under their kitchen sink. I'm like, wait, where do you keep your potatoes, Dan? So that I'm like, okay, maybe our family's a little different. But I remember when we would go to buy a car, which was like once every decade, and we kind of like, I kind of geared up, you know, I'd like do my hair and put on my jacket, because for us, buying a car was a multi-day process. Right? My dad would take us, we'd go in, he knew all the numbers. He already had financing from a local credit union. He had done his research. This is before the internet. And we would go in and take a test drive, and then we'd sit down, and my dad loves negotiating. He loves it. And you know, if you grow up in America, you hate negotiating. You're horrible at it. You're scared of it. You think it's like cheap and bad. You
have to remember.
You do.
You
feel that way. Okay. So why do you feel that way?
You know, it's so funny, because you're already hitting everything on the head with everything we teach. You know, like, we approach spirituality and manifestation through psychology and neuroscience. And so we have this whole money workshop and how manifestation and money works. And it's all about getting back to the beliefs you imprinted in childhood. And of course, mine were a very codependent, you know, it was like, never ask for what you want. It was a lot of enmeshment. Money's bad. I'm writing a hot check. Basically, it all stems down to, you're not worth more money.
Totally. Isn't that amazing? What a powerful, you're not worth more money. And it manifests in so many different ways. At work, you just accept the salary they give you, because who am I to ask for more, right? And we could talk about salary negotiation. I help people routinely get $10,000 to $25,000 raises. There's a method to it, but I can show you all the best tactics in the world, but if you don't believe you are worth it or you deserve it, then the words will go in one ear and out another.
1,000%.
Yeah. Same with your partners. You don't ask for what you want. You don't say what you want. And you kind of just go along on the ride of life as if you're in a river raft, just hands behind your head, just floating along the river of life. I think that's okay sometimes. Sometimes you want to see where the path takes you, but I've also found it's a lot more fun to pick up an oar and decide where I'm going to go in the river, right? 100%. Even if I get it wrong, at least I'm in charge and I can decide where to go next.
And you learned a lot along the way.
So true. Yeah. So my dad taught us about negotiation and, you know, we would go in there and I remember at one point, you know, we've been in there multiple days. Like we would go in there and negotiate, go home and then come back the next day. I thought this was normal. You know, it's almost like we're eating Cheerios at the dealership. And so we finally come to an agreement. We're like closing in. And then my dad goes, one last thing. I need you to throw in the floor mats. And, you know, these floor mats are, what are they, $10, $50? And I was like, oh my God, Dad, is this really happening right now? But what I learned from these experiences was, number one, you can ask for what you want. That is like number one. It's so obvious, but so neglected. Number two, this is a very powerful concept of my money is good money. And I'll give you an example of what I mean by that. I have, you know, a lot of employees. I have vendors who work with me, others. And I always tell them when they come to work, I say, look, here's what we expect. I'm not going to bargain with you on your price. I think you're worth it. I think you're great. I'm going to pay you what you're asking. I'm going to pay you on time every month. There's never going to be a question. And if things work out, I would love to work with you for years and years. You know, I've worked with my assistant for this many years and my trainer for that many years. But if these are my expectations, so here they are, I'm writing them down. If you can meet him, I'd love to work with you for a long time. And if not, wow. I totally understand, but that's not going to be a fit for what I need. So what I'm saying there is my money is good money. And there's a lot of people who want to earn that business or earn that money. But you have to be clear about what you expect. And you also have to be abundant enough to know that if this person can't live up to it, it doesn't mean they're a bad person. They're just not a fit for my expectations. And then I'll go and find somebody else who will.
It's such a great proposition of expectations so that everybody can just meet them right up front and no hard feelings if not. I love that.
Yeah, no hard feelings. That's the thing. Sometimes we think that negotiations have to be adversarial.
And that's scary. Somebody has
to, yeah, and like you have to go in and kick down a door and slam on a desk. And that's actually not it at all. I've found that negotiations are very friendly and agreeable, but it's like you're solving a puzzle together. Here's what my expectations are. What are your expectations? Okay, now that they're all out on the table, let's see where we can move on some of these so that we're both in agreement and we both feel good. That is a beautiful negotiation.
Agreed. Geez, I'm going to put that into practice. I really love that. Okay, so the top question, of course, we have to kick this off with, during volatile times like we've been seeing, what do we do with our money? And I'm going to ask from a couple of perspectives, but the first are people who have money in the market, yeah. You know, and especially ones that are familiar with your teachings, you know, which we'll get into, but I imagine that some people have money kind of all over the place. Of course, you get into target index funds, but for those who maybe are a little bit more diversified, what are your suggestions?
Okay, I got three things to think about when it comes to money. Especially right now and during volatile times. The first is that you need to be financially secure before you can be thinking about more advanced concepts. So the first thing it's critical is, do you actually have an emergency fund, a one-year emergency fund? Now, this is alarming.
Wow. We've always said a six-month, so
that's correct.
A year.
Yes, wow. You're right. This is for the first time I'm saying that, and I want to talk about that.
Great.
So the typical advice that you hear from people is a 3 to 6 month emergency fund. For the first time, people are really realizing why that advice is out there. Because when things go really bad, they don't just go bad for other industries, they go bad for all industries, and some even worse than others. It also means that your investments, if you've got them, go down as well. So you're hit on all fronts. And a long, big emergency fund lets you sustain it, lets you breathe and make better decisions. Mm-hmm. So in the past, I said 6 months, but I said that, you know, depending on how conservative you want to get, you can have up to a one-year emergency fund. I'm now saying everybody should have a one-year emergency fund. So what does it mean? It means you figure out your minimum expenses. What does it take to live? And I'm talking minimum, like if you have a partner and they lose their job, what would you cut? Also, if you have expenses that are already scheduled, like a wedding, I had somebody write me and say, I have a wedding for August. Do you think I should cancel it? And I said, you know what? I would cancel it. And I hate to say that because I know what goes into planning a wedding, but money in your pocket right now is worth more than potential money later. So that's step one, is to build that emergency fund. Oh, I should say one more thing. There are so many ways to build that up. Right?
Great.
Now,
let's hear that.
Because a lot of people are like, hey, that sounds great, but where do I actually get the money for this? I'm not working right now, or I'm on hiatus or furloughed. Okay, if you have student loans or credit card debt, many of those companies are willing to work with you right now. So you can call them up. You can say, look, times are really tough. I need to find a way to defer these payments or find some other sort of agreement. I don't want to pay interest or finance charges. What can you do for me? So I've already told my readers this at I Will Teach You to Be Rich. Many of them have called up their student loan companies. They already cut those payments. They're saving months of payments. Some of them called their landlords. They're getting their fees or their rent either stretched out or in rare cases waived. So there are options where you can start saving money right now.
Yeah. And you know, that kind of, it liaisons into another question that I was going to have, which we'll get into in a minute, but how about the person who, for instance, ends up filing for bankruptcy in this time? How does one rebound from that?
Well, bankruptcy, you know what? I think that's a really important question, because the candid truth is that there's not always a silver lining to these things. And I really want to be honest and candid about that. Some jobs are gone and they're not coming back, at least not in the short term. Some industries are going to have a really tough time right now. That is why I think the first thing we need to do is to look around, acknowledge what's going on, make a plan, and move. Mm. So we have to accept reality. If you were working at a restaurant before,
yep,
that job is not coming back for a long time. So instead of waiting and hoping our boss is going to contact us, let's look around, accept reality, and make a plan. And I have found that the best antidote to anxiety in times like this is to have a plan. If you declare bankruptcy, if you have to, then you'll deal with it. You'll discharge those debts except for student loans, and your credit will be ruined for a little while. But in the grand scheme, there are more important things than your credit score, and you will look forward. But I will tell you that probably 85% of the people who write me asking if they should declare bankruptcy should not declare bankruptcy.
Wow, tell us about that.
Because they have no idea. I'm like, okay, you feel like you have a lot of debt. Tell me how much you have.
And don't, yeah, I'll hear like 15 grand.
Yeah, that's exactly what they say. It's 15 to 25 grand most of the time. I'm like, okay. I'm like, have you run a debt payoff calculator? They're like, what's that? I'm like, have you read my book? They're like, no, I've been thinking about it. I'm like, why are we talking right now?
Yeah.
You haven't even read my book. It's $10. What are we doing?
Totally.
I'm like, oh my God. Okay, so let me kind of zoom back. I understand why people think of bankruptcy, because it's actually a very emotional reaction. You look at these bills coming in every month. You're like, I don't know what to do. These words about Ramit sitting here saying, make a plan. It's like, okay, this guy's just talking, but I don't know what to do for me. And the answer again is to accept reality. Okay, I have 15K or 50K in debt. Fine, I met a guy who has $300,000 in student loan debt. I sat down with him, we run the numbers, and you discover that if you make a few changes, first of all, you can call these student loan companies, they'll work with you. Second of all, adding a little bit more per month can cut your payments down by years, okay? So most of the people who are talking about bankruptcy or asking about it, it's a very emotional reaction to a serious problem, but they haven't actually sat down and run the numbers. That's what the book shows you how to do.
Yeah. And it has a really clear section in that. Yeah. And I think the real message here is when you are in debt, and I imagine many people at this point will be going into a lot of debt because they're having to live on credit cards while they're getting strategic and didn't have that emergency fund in place or, you know, the privilege of having that yet. Are there any other tips that somebody who's just acting fast, racked up, you know, let's say five, six, $7,000 to just live for a little bit during this time while they get the next job. Anything they should know specifically to just kind of get back in motion?
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree with you. That is going to be a lot of people. So for those people, let's stay on this first step of building that emergency fund. All right, how are we doing this? You know, some of us are just like, my rent is due in a few weeks. What now? So as I said, you want to first call up anybody you owe money to. Explain it to them, use the scripts on my site or my book. Just say, look, this is the situation. It's really tough right now. I need to work with you on this. And you would be surprised how many people will help you out, especially now. So that's number one. Number two is to focus on your earnings, right? And I'm going to skip over my usual number two, which is if you've got your emergency fund, keep investing. And right, that's something that if you've followed my plan and you've been investing and you have that emergency fund, keep investing, follow the plan. But number three, this is for everybody, is to focus on your earnings. So right now, there's a limit to how much you can cut. That's the case always, but especially now, there's no limit to how much you can earn. And so we are seeing people be very creative in how they start earning money. Even now, while they start businesses that are completely virtual. So this
could you give us some examples? Because I totally believe in that. In fact, I've been in this position a couple of times, very similar to this. And it's like when I started my first blog and, you know, things that did earn me a little bit of money. What have been some examples you've been seeing just to start to expand and get people creative in this time?
Okay. So I'm going to start off with people who already had businesses and they had to retool them in 72 hours.
Yeah.
And then I'll give you examples of people who had nothing. So I spoke to a lot of business owners, and there's a business in New Jersey called Runner's High. He sent me a DM on Instagram. He goes, "We sell specialty footwear for runners. Because of what's going on, we put our shoes outside on the curb. If people need to pick it up, they can come and get it that way. We offer free shipping, and our customers are loving us compared to the big box stores where they're not getting that kind of attention."
Yeah.
Amazing. I had another gym owner who wrote me, and he said they sent their kettlebells home with their best personal training clients. They said, "Take these home. We know you're great clients. We will craft your at-home workouts."
Great.
So keep these. That's amazing. And then they switched to virtual training. Incredible. Now, if you don't already have a business, what do you do? I love talking about this because we help people start businesses and grow them. You know, the biggest thing I hear right now is, why would anyone want to pay for something right now? There's no way to start a business. And I actually had a young woman write me about a few days ago, and she goes, "You know, Ramit, I'm a nurse. I've been following your stuff. I've been thinking about creating a business for about 3 years." She goes, "It all seems so foolish now. Who cares about following your passion, designing a logo?" She's like, "None of that stuff matters anymore." And I said to her, "You know, I appreciate that you're in the medical field and you are helping people. I really appreciate that." I said, "But for somebody who needs a logo right now, that is not foolish. They need help and they're willing to pay for it." And so there are so many needs out there right now. You have parents working from home with their kids who need lesson plans. They don't know where to go. They will pay for that. You have people who don't know what to wear so they look professional while they're on Zoom. Or you have people who are just like, "You know what? I want to look good. I want to know how to do my hair. Can somebody teach me that? I'll pay them $50 or $100. It's really easy in times like this to think that nobody's paying for anything. But for thousands of years, people have paid to entertain ourselves, to adorn ourselves, or just because we want to, and that will continue forever.
I'm quickly interrupting this episode to tell you about the free quarantine roadmap that we created to help support all of our listeners and community during this time. You can access it at the link below. It includes me speaking on all of the energetics and how they pertain to manifestation during this time in order to find your magnetism and manifest during and on the other side of this. It also has three of our deep imaginings, which is the hypnosis process that I founded. and you can access them entirely free with their journal prompts. We want to make sure to have that so that it's as accessible as possible to anybody in need. And please send that to any friends, loved ones, family members. And based on what you're hearing in this episode, if you are ready to jump into this work and double down and start manifesting during this time, because there's so much magnetism to be had, use the code all caps start manifesting to pay only $1 for the first month to help everybody right now who is needing a financial break before the regular payments kick in starting month two for the remainder of the membership. Or you can use the code all caps quarantine50 to receive 50% off any of our a la carte workshops. The pathway is our all-encompassing access portal for members that has every single one of our workshops, including our supported class, which is once a month. My co-host and I go through and we answer everybody's questions about manifestation. And on top of that, if you're wanting to hear more stories like you've heard at the top of this episode, then please go check out on our homepage entirely free, or you can get it at the link below. It's called The Motivation, and that's our portal that encompasses every single testimonial we've picked up that we continue to add to every month. And that will help you at this time, hashtag stay in trust, to continue manifesting now and on the other side of this. Now back to this episode. And there's a great book, you know, that's really interesting. I read it when I started my first blog, and it's called The $100 Startup. And I think it could be really, I don't know if you've had a chance to pick that one out. Yeah, amazing. And it's
Chris
really
Gillibald.
Powerful. Exactly. For exactly what you're talking about, to really find like, what are the skill sets that set you apart, the interests that you have that, you know, you could do all day long, and how do you create something out of that in this time? And I think it really allows people to get creative and act on their feet. If you were serving, or if you found yourself in a job that no longer exists, I mean, it really does help too, I think, push you into the virtual realm. And I think right now is a great example of how important it is, no matter what kind of company you have, making sure that you also have a virtual offering or digital offering to accompany it is really
100%.
Important.
And I love the words you use. It allows you to be creative, which is so critical for an entrepreneur. Now, if you're listening, you may have never thought of yourself as an entrepreneur, but somebody asked me, what is the key characteristic that you need to be successful as an entrepreneur? And I think it ties in with creativity really well. I gave a presentation yesterday to some of my readers, and I showed them 20 or 30 business ideas they could use right now. Okay. And I said, tell me your reaction when you look at these ideas. You know, some people are going to look at this and say, yeah, but that won't work because nobody will pay for it. There's no time. Can't deliver it virtually, blah, blah, blah. And a small group of people will say, what if I could actually adapt that and make it work? And that is the key differentiator between someone who can take control of their earnings and someone who will find every reason for it not to work. That is creativity.
I entirely agree. Or if you find yourself the person who's like, I cannot listen to another person tell me what to do anymore. You probably have a little spirit in there.
Wait, that's how I feel. Is that how you feel too?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I was the worst employee.
Tell me, what was your resentment? Because if you become an entrepreneur like you have, there's something you are deeply resentful of, but you can't explain why. Like, did you have anything like that?
I'm spiritual and I'm an Aquarius. So we like to do things on our time, how we want, within our creativity. What are you?
I'm a Cancer. And
oh, yeah.
First of all, I don't want to have to go to an office. I don't mind working long hours, but I don't want to have to go to an office and work under fluorescent lights. I just hate it. And I especially resented putting one of those employee badges on my waist. You know, and having to swipe it in. I'm like, it felt like handcuffs.
Yeah.
And I know this sounds crazy to people listening. What a privileged guy. Fine. You can call me privileged because I did not want to wear that thing hanging down from my belt. Okay. Or a belt for that matter. But I just resented it. And that is why I decided I want to start a business. I want it to be work from home. Mm-hmm. And eventually I want to be able to travel for 6 weeks at a time. Now, again, like right now, we're putting all those things on pause. But as soon as it was clear what was going on with coronavirus, I want to tell you kind of how we reacted in our business.
Yeah, please. That would be really helpful.
So I believe in times like this that our common tendency is to freeze.
Totally.
And so common. Just think
and
of
freak out.
Yeah, and freak out. So think of driving down the highway. If you see something in the middle of the road, what is the first thing you do while driving?
Personally?
Yeah. Well, what does anybody do?
I do this all the time for animals. I'm actually really reactive in a really calm, relaxed. I slow down and I detour around it. I'm not calm like this in all situations, but weirdly under trauma, I'm actually very calm.
Now that is interesting. Okay. Very interesting. I think for most people who are not as skilled as you, they're driving down the freeway, they slam on the brakes. That's the first thing. If we see like a tire just sitting in the middle of the road, we freeze. And that is what I've found in times of crisis. We freeze. We wait for somebody to tell us what to do.
Mm.
And I was looking around and I'm like, this is going to get bad. I live in New York City. And I told my wife, I think there's going to be a quarantine. We got to get out of here. So we left the city and I was texting with my friends and they were like, dude, what are you doing? Because it was too early for us to leave. It wasn't big yet. And the next day we got on an all-team call. And in already one day, it had suddenly taken on more importance.
Mm.
And when you're on a team, people get very concerned and worried, right? They're like, am I going to lose my job, etc. So the first thing I told them was, I'm so grateful that we have a remote business so you can be at home. That's number one.
Yeah.
Number two, your health and your family's health comes first. Because it's not just about you. If your parents get sick or your children, we know you're going to have to go take care of them. So we're going to tell you right now, your health comes first. The third thing is we immediately issued a $1,000 stipend for anything relating to coronavirus.
Wow.
So if you want food, please send us the bill. If you need to send something to your family, your parents, your siblings, send it. Just send us the bill. And then the final thing was we said, look, we're doing all this, but we also need to ask you to help us, the business. We expect that some people might get sick. We need you to fill out this contingency planning form. Tell us everything you're working on. Send us links to the right projects.
Mm.
So if you have to go out, that's okay, but we can keep the business running.
That's really, really smart.
So you know what? I think the key there is like people appreciate honesty. They're like, look, we don't know what's going to happen, but this is what we're doing. And people love knowing that someone is looking out for them. We did that
Absolutely.
With our employees. Then with our customers, the next business day, we sent an email. We said, we know times are tough. We're going to extend you a 2-month grace period on your payments. If you need it, let us know. And do you know how many customers wrote us? They're like, so a lot of them have made a lot of money using our stuff.
Yeah.
But so some of them need it. Some of them don't. But a lot of them were like, we're going to be customers for life because
wow.
of this.
Wow. Wow. That's beautiful.
So that's the kind of stuff, you know, if you don't run a business, that's okay. You can still do it with your family. Hey, I'm sending everybody a few bags of nuts, whatever you need right now, just to let people know that you're out there, you're willing to help, and you're being proactive. I think that's so powerful.
I think that's really smart. Something I really want to pivot into that I think is very important. I think is very important, and it's sort of what we've been educating on. I have the gift of reading energetics, so it's like how we have been communicating messaging around what's currently happening and how it's actually like a really beautiful opportunity to prosper right now. It's an unbelievable opportunity that not a lot of people are actually able to get into homeostasis, calm, and see the potential. So let's talk about mindset a little bit.
Yeah.
How, like, what is your mindset during these times? And how can other people start to tap into a mindset that is actually that of prospering, of opportunity, you know, coming out of this actually on the other side in a really great way.
Yes. Wow. You know what? First of all, thank you for talking about this because it shifts the conversation away from playing defense to playing offense.
Yes.
And there is a time and a place to play defense. You know, you need to call up your credit card company. You need to focus on saving. You need to make a plan. Yes, do that first. But there's also an opportunity to take a step and shift into offense. What am I going to make of this situation? When I look back a year, 18 months, 2 years from now, what am I going to have learned? What skills? How will I have changed my life in a different way? So those are the questions that I think we can ask. And again, I'm just so thankful that you're bringing this up, because it's easy to get mired in preventing all the bad things. And we should do those things, but what about creating the good things? My mindset on this is that the best way to be able to create opportunity is to first have your basic necessities covered. Have a plan. Mm-hmm. You're living in a place where as much as possible, you can thrive. You have a roof over your head. If you have children, you've kind of created a structure where they're going to be learning during certain parts of the day. And as much as possible, you have a place where you can work or think. Again, some of us are more fortunate where we have, let's say, 2 bedrooms. Some people are packed into a room in New York City for the foreseeable future. So we deal with the cards we're dealt, right? We play with the cards we're dealt. But after you have that plan and you've made the best of what you can, then the question is, what's next? What am I going to come out of this with? So from an opportunity perspective and from a mindset perspective, I think to myself, okay, I've planned as much as I possibly could on the financial side. I had built a 1-year emergency fund. You know, I have an investment plan that everybody here has access to in the book, so you know what to do. I know I'm not reacting. What am I going to do next? And so for us, one of the things I decided was, look, how can I help? The only way I can help right now is I can teach what I know. So as soon as this happened, I started holding these nightly fireside chats.
They've been great.
Oh, you're watching?
Yeah. Yeah, oh, totally. They've been awesome.
Thank you. So
last night, people were like, where's the fire?
So that's the problem, right? It's really funny you say that. These are totally imperfect. We're using my iPhone to film them. My wife is the videographer. It's called Fireside Chats with Ramit, but I'm not very good at starting a fire in the fireplace. So they always die out after like 10 minutes, but nobody cares.
Yeah.
You know, it's like at this point, we don't need to be perfect. We just need to figure out how to create an opportunity. So the way that I can help is by teaching stuff. So some nights I'm out there talking about personal finance. Some nights I'm dressing up like a baby and telling bedtime stories. Whatever. We're going to have fun doing this. And so walking out of this, like I never intended to be here. I never intended for any of this stuff, but I will have created a ton of assets, a ton of videos, a new community. And I don't know what'll happen with that, but I wonder if we can all think about what are the opportunities we can create for ourselves.
Yeah, that's I think perfect. And you know, I've been educating this audience, like just on an energetic front, what you can be doing. And I think that's a really great way to look at it. Pivoting to a question for the person who hasn't been totally, you know, impacted financially, there are some listeners out there who do have the opportunity right now to invest. Is it a good time to put money in the market?
Okay, this is a great question. So this is a very small, select group of people who have done all the basic preparation. They have the emergency fund. They probably still have a solid income and they are saying, hey, what am I supposed to do? What opportunities can I create? And you know what? I feel for them because it's one of those things that's not really popular to talk about right now. You can't really talk about continuing to invest when there are other people around you who, you know, are struggling on a daily basis. Here's what I would say. From an investment perspective, you have an investment plan. You are regularly investing. If you're following IWT, you're investing in things like target date funds. Keep doing it. Think of it like this. If you go to buy toothpaste and it's 30% off, you're happy. So when the market drops, particularly if you're young and you have a long time horizon, you're picking up shares at a discount, assuming that market grows over the next 30 years, which 100% of the time it has in our history. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's what you can do. If you still have even more to invest, you certainly can. You can add to your investments, again, providing you're maintaining your emergency fund and all those things. There are opportunities, financially speaking, just like there were in 2008, 2009, when people thought the market was ending. Yeah, people thought the market was ending. And if you had invested during that time and continued investing, you would have made incredible gains. And finally, I just want to say this. There's more to life than just money. So if you have extra money, I can't help but emphasize, how can you serve other people? Where can you donate? What kind of changes can you make? And people need help. So if you can donate, if you're already maxed out on all your accounts and you're continuing to invest more and more, you have plenty of money. Send a little bit of that to people who are in need. It will show you that a rich life is more than just what's in your bank account.
Yeah. And honestly, even if you're not fully there, I mean, everybody's called off my housekeeper. That's such a privilege to even have a housekeeper. I've doubled her payment every single week. Amazing. I mean, I've looked around anywhere. Where can we give more? Where can we, just the littlest amount, because she has no work right now. So it's really like, how can I make my comforts in life, like you're saying, get to my minimum and then serve others right now? Wow. How can I make sure my team's set right now, just like you did with your company, and serve our customers, for anybody who's been writing in? It's really been, how can we help others? And I think that's a really important part of that conversation. And there are people who are prospering right now and are in that position because, you know, they've worked hard to be in, and that's beautiful too. Pivoting kind of out of this, for the person who is living paycheck to paycheck, they still have their sense of income. What's your number one action step to getting out of that cycle of just paycheck to paycheck?
I think you first need to decide that this is not going to go on. You have to. Because when you're in it, it's a system, it's a process, and there are lots of systemic reasons that it is very difficult to change the situation. Okay, so we got to acknowledge those. It's not like people haven't pulled themselves up by their bootstraps hard enough. That's BS. But we do need to work with what we've got and try to make the changes we can. And the first thing is to make a decision. I do not want to be in this forever. So even if they're listening here, they're starting to hear little subtle things about what you do with your money, what I do with my money. How do we think about abundance? That's going to help change that. Now, on a tactical level, what do you do? You need to make a plan. You need to know, if you've got debt, how long is it going to take for you to pay it off? 90% of the people who write me don't know how much debt they are in. 95 to 98% of them do not know when their debt will be paid off. You need to. So you go to, just Google debt payoff calculator, plug it in, create a plan. And then when it comes to earning more, that's the next step. You got to take the money you've got. You got to CEO, cut costs, earn more, and optimize your spending. You do those things and you're going to be able to slowly and gradually get out of the situation you're in.
And I'll give an example of that personally. When I, because I used to be, you know, in entertainment as an actress, and I was a waitress, and that would be really volatile when I would be making money or wouldn't be. And when I knew that I was going to start to be an entrepreneur, really step on my path, I moved into an apartment. Like, I literally manifested one that was $350 a month in Echo Park. That's like getting that in Williamsburg. It was bananas. But I always had this Australian at my first job who taught me. She was like, always live cheap, Lacey. You will have all the freedom in the world if you live cheap. So I remembered that. And so that was the thing. I cut all of my costs everywhere. Like, anywhere I didn't need to be spending money, I got rid of it. I had $4,000 of debt. And so I spent that year, I worked as a teacher. I earned more money. I went and sought out a job that was stable. It wasn't in waitressing. And I ended up earning more money to focus that whole year on paying off debt and setting up what we call our 6 month, but now a year is a great suggestion, a fuck you fund. Wow. That's what to, you know, put together so I could literally be like, fuck you, I want to quit this job. Fuck you, I don't want to do this. I want to go try something else or leave this relationship or whatever. And paid off the debt. And during that entire year and prior to that, I had been reading investing books as well, which we can also get into some of those tips. But I had been educating myself on finances. Like, when I do have money one day, what am I going to do with it? And I will argue that your book is actually, to me, the best resource, especially for this generation and for everybody who's going to be facing life after COVID-19. I think your book book is so practical, so pragmatic, and really walks you through every step, holds your hand along the way. So I just want to give that example for people out there that exactly the formula you just said works.
Well, thank you so much. And I just want to reflect for everyone listening what I heard you doing in those examples. You know, sometimes I wish that we could follow people home and observe their behaviors just for one day. And we would see the difference between really successful people and others who struggle to hit those levels. Things like, how do you keep your house so organized? And you follow somebody home and you see, oh my God, they have a little plate by their door. They put their keys in there 100% of the time, right? Little things like that. What I heard from you was movement. You were not stuck and stagnant. Everything you said in those examples was, I was doing this. I found another job. I figured out how much debt I needed to pay. I started earning more. I read these books and I asked myself, what am I going to do when I earn more? Like, just those examples alone are so different than the ordinary person that it is no surprise to me that you became so successful. You do things totally differently.
That's a really good reflection, and you know, picking out those patterns, that's really, and movement, I would argue, in everything we believe in manifestation, it's taking an action step forward. Yes. It's that movement. So that was really important to highlight. If you enjoyed this episode, definitely send it to the friend, the family member, whoever out there could benefit. That's how I garner a lot of my information, are when friends shoot over a really profound episode they've heard somewhere to me. I also want to encourage you, if you want to be entered to win a 1-year membership to The Pathway, go and leave a 5-star podcast review. We've been announcing some really cool ones and reading them off, and it's been pretty profound how already those pathway memberships have been super instrumental to the people who have won them. We'll choose a new winner each month, so listen in here at the end of the episode to hear if you've won. We also want to invite any of our WISE community members to submit to become a process guest. So that's any of our members 45 and older who have gone on to manifest using the Pathway membership, so that we can have you serve as an expander for anybody in our community who is in the WISE category. Have a great weekend.